Hello, and welcome to the Heal Your Heart, Heal Your Life podcast, the podcast where we talk all things healing from trauma, healing from life lessons. How have we grown? What have we learned? In the hopes that it helps you guys, the listeners out there, to also heal and grow from things that you might see that are very similar to what we've been through. I am Kiara Jade. I'm your host for this podcast. I'm a relationship coach. I would love to interview our wonderful guest today, Zoe Simmons. Zoe is a journalist, a copywriter, an author, a speaker, and a disability advocate. And she's our first disability advocate on the podcast. So I'm very excited to interview her today. Zoe, I'll throw to you. Thank you so much for coming on today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, no worries. I'd love to hear more about your process and your journey from maybe getting diagnosed with your disability to all the way to becoming an advocate to help others. Like, was that a tough journey? What did you go through in the process?
I actually think I became an advocate before I was diagnosed because about five years ago, actually probably longer now, but I started experiencing symptoms and realizing symptoms that I had for a long time weren't normal, and I was trying to find answers and doctors. Oof, gosh, there. You have this assumption that if you're not well, you'll go to a doctor and they'll, you know, try and help you and try to fix you. But what I experienced was a lot of medical gaslighting, a lot of medical misogyny, a lot of people just not listening or saying it's in my head or we don't know or it doesn't matter what's wrong with you. And I just found that so devastating, especially when my tests kept not finding answers. I had surgeries that didn't find answers, which is a very common thing. Lots of people don't get those things, but that's not because there's not something happening. It's just because we don't have the tests or technology or special knowledge to be able to find these things.
Yeah.
And also the lack of research and invisible and dynamic disabilities. So, I just felt so helpless, and knowing that I am impacted by this means that obviously other people are, and that just made me so angry. And then when I realized what I was experiencing was disabilities, and I've actually been disabled my whole life, it just made me so angry that our society stigmatizes disability so much. It's just crap, and there's so much ableism and so much like pushing into these non-disabled boxes that you have to fit into, and it harms people.
Yeah.
And I just want to do whatever I can to share my lived experience to make a difference, because it's really bad.
Definitely. I'm so sorry to hear you that you had that experience, but I'm sure it's a very common experience. I've also had the unfortunate situation where I've been told, oh, why don't, like, it's a psychological thing, I think. Why don't you just go work it out? You've got a psych degree. And I've been like, what? And just like the horrifying feeling of like being left on your own with literally nowhere to go when modern medicine has just kind of come up against a brick wall. But literally there's so much more out there, so many more tests that can be run than what we've got, and we've got a way to go for sure. Yeah, what was that like for you, kind of being told, you know, like the gaslighting and like is this all in your head?
It was rough. I do vividly remember the first time I went to a doctor for help, and it was a female doctor. So I was like, oh yeah, she'll listen to me. Like, she'll get that it's not normal to have 28 day periods and to feel like someone's stabbing your abdomen and pouring like acid through you. She'll be like, yeah, no, that's not normal. No, she was like, oh, it's dairy. And I was like, no, it's not dairy. She's like, yes, it's dairy. I'm like, no, it's not. I'm vegan. And then she was like, oh, well, it's your weight then. And she didn't do any tests. She didn't even hear all my symptoms. She just instantly dismissed me. And that's a really common experience. And, you know, it's not anything new either. Women's issues have often been labeled as mass hysteria. Although I do want to acknowledge that it's obviously not just women. Like, I want to be inclusive for transgender people and non-binary people.
of course.
But, you know, it's so hard to be heard. And I have a lot of privilege as a, you know, a white person that can communicate mostly. So people that can't do that and have these other additional barriers often get hit with even more disbelief, and they have to fight even more. And it's just not good enough. If it's even bad when you have that privilege. you have to acknowledge like how bad is people that don't have that, and
Yeah.
to fight for all of us, really.
Definitely. And like, why should it have to be so hard to get help and support when you go to a healthcare professional? Do you know why that is? Like, do you have any ideas of, I know we could spend ages trying to pinpoint it exactly, but like, is it the pressure to get a solution of like, oh, it must be dairy, it must be this, like that they're just grasping at straws to give you an answer, like that you think that it's the railroading that's gone on?
I mean, I think a lot of the time it's that people call themselves specialists without having that actual specialist knowledge and lived experience. When it's just clinical, it's not enough. You have to have someone that's actually lived experience, because the medical industry as a whole, though I'm not a doctor, as far as I'm aware, is quite ableist in itself. It's got long hours, it's got, ridiculous work requirements, and that's something that a lot of disabled people just couldn't do. So, they're forced into doing that, like, yeah, I'm fine. So I just don't think they understand what it's actually like, as well as the fact that women's pain has been labeled as hysteria for as long as things have existed, really. And that still happens. Like, we still get told it's, a mental health thing rather than something actually happening to your body, because we just don't believe women's pain or anyone with uteruses' pain.
Yeah, and that's just ridiculous. Like, we should be supporting the people coming in pain and not, yeah, assuming that, because we can't understand it because we haven't been through it personally, what that would be like. And definitely hearing you on that, the hours and just going through a residency to become a doctor is just amazingly difficult. Yeah, that it blocks so many people out. Like, can you imagine how many amazing doctors with disabilities might be out there if we had a different system? That's a really good point.
Yeah, I mean, I know there are some, but it's not an easy thing. And I think that because it is such an ableist industry, and it is such a stigmatizing industry towards disability, like, for example, I've had so many health professionals say things like, oh, don't call yourself disabled. Oh, and it's like, it's not a bad word, it's just a fact. And the fact that it's so stigmatized, and that we want to distance ourselves from these things when embracing my disabled identity has actually been a huge part of feeling empowered by the bad things that happen and feeling
Yeah.
like I can make a difference. So it's just wild that this exists so much. So it's no wonder that it's such a dismissive industry. And, a lot of these conditions, we don't have a lot of research. They are absolutely underfunded, especially ones that predominantly affect people with uteruses. It gets hit by stigma, it gets hit by lack of funding, it gets hit by lack of researchers. And then even when we do have good research, it doesn't always hit the specialists, like, for example, ME/CFS, which cannot pronounce it, but it's like myalgic emphysema something. It's something chronic fatigue syndrome, but it's so much more than that. But so many doctors still recommend graded exercise therapy and cognitive behavioral therapy for it. And graded exercise therapy, which is just increasing your exercise, has been proven to be harmful. This has been proven, like, it's been removed from guidelines overseas, but not in Australian medical guidelines.
Strange.
Still being recommended. So we've still got specialists actively harming people and making them worse, and they're not listening to them when they say, hey, this is not working, this is making me sicker. And it's like, oh, just push harder. And it kills people. It does. People die from these conditions.
Yeah, I can't imagine a world where push harder is ever the right answer. Maybe if you're having a baby or something. Now that, yeah. yeah, gosh. I'd love to circle back to what you said about embracing your identity as disabled and how that was really empowering for you. Like, what made you decide to do that? And like, what were the factors that kind of led up to that experience?
Well, I feel like with a lot of things, people really diminish themselves, and I definitely did with my own conditions, and that messaging is kind of conveyed over and over to you with the whole narrative of, oh, push through, oh, it's not too bad, oh, other people have it worse, but you are allowed to actually accept that, hey, I have things that impact me and my life, and it's okay to accept that. So it was really hard because I was always in pain. I was always, I mean, I am still, this hasn't changed, but I am always tired. I'm always coping with these symptoms and things that have a huge impact on my life, like my ability to do work, my ability to cook, my ability to clean, my ability to leave the house. So many things just kept being impacted, and my world kept getting smaller because of pain and fatigue. And, you know, I don't think people without this can really understand what it's like. It's the kind of fatigue where just walking to my lounge room and, I don't know, trying to eat something is exhausting and I don't need a nap from it. Like not being able to charge your phone because you can't remember how to put the plug in the wall, a little pluggy thing into your phone, and you just let your phone die. It's, you know, it's really hard to live with these things. And I couldn't, I had to leave my job. I had to start my own business. It was really hard to feel all those impacts and then not really have a reason or label for it when they couldn't find something. And so basically, I just began posting on social media about what I was experiencing, and the disabled community reached out, a number of people, and they're like, hey, you know, you're allowed to call yourself disabled even if you don't know what's happening. Like, it's not the condition. You don't need a diagnosis. You just, yeah. And then, you know, I still really distanced myself for a long time because I didn't feel like I was disabled enough to call myself disabled. But that is something that I think everyone pretty much has. And if it affects you, it is enough. But that is it. If it affects you, that's the only requirement. Like, if it impacts and on your ability to live and do things and exist, you're allowed to call yourself disabled. But I still, you know, it took me a while because you know, I've actually been disabled my whole life because I'm autistic, although I only found that out last year. And I've had mental illness for as long as I can remember, with bipolar and anxiety. So technically, I've always been disabled. And I would use language like, oh, well, technically I'm disabled because I have a mental illness, and that's technically a disability. It's no technically about it. It is a disability. But I still kind of felt like I was like this imposter and like just sneaking into disabled spaces, and the actual disabled people would get mad at me. And that is not the case at all. The disabled community saved my life, really, with the amount of people that reached out and hearing other people working through these things, and people that I was like, oh wow, you wouldn't question your identity at all. I'm like, oh yeah, no, they totally do. People like Kylie Finley and Tara Moss, for example, really helped me find a sense of self, I guess, and to know that it's okay to call myself disabled. And I started, you know, talking to other people with disabilities and various disabilities, and like, yeah, no, you are disabled.
I love that. I love that they've empowered you, and just by you posting on social media about your experience was enough for people to come out and go, hey, let's have a chat about this. And you know, maybe you are disabled, maybe you're not, but that's up to you kind of to decide based on your like it just feeling it and the impact is enough. Like, I love that. This questioning of self that you have to go through to kind of find label or diagnosis that kind of sits well and like works for you. Do you feel like that's related to the medical gaslighting that you've been told for so long that, you know, you should just push harder and you should just do these things and it'll be fine and it's not that bad and all of this, that when it actually is that bad, it's really hard for us to accept.
I mean, I definitely think that's a factor. I think, you know, as an example, trigger warning here for bushfires, but as part of my work as a journalist and an author, I worked with a lot of people from my hometown in the Black Summer bushfires. And even people that had lost their houses and been through these awful traumas were like, oh, well, other people have it worse. I think we're just conditioned to not, you know, think about ourselves and recognize that something impacts us. And it's not a bad thing, and it's not a, you know, competition. You're allowed to feel something. But I mean, sense of self is so hard anyway, especially as an autistic person. Like, your life is pretty much just masking and trying to figure out, oh, what does society want? What's the correct protocol here? I do not know. So it's hard to find an identity and to relate to it and embrace it. And it does take time, but you get proud by practicing. I heard that quote from Carly Finley, and I'm pretty sure Stella Young said it. Probably lots of people said it. I don't know.
How long did it take you to kind of go on this journey and get to that point of, like, you said it takes a while practicing?
I mean, I think I was around 21 when I started realizing that my pain wasn't normal because I broke my wrist and then I realized my abdominal pain was worse than a broken bone. I was like, huh, hang on, that's not normal. Everyone has just been telling me that period pain is normal and it is not. So I'm 28 now. I think maybe I was 26 when I started. No, I was 25 because I got in a Young Disabled Leaders program, but I still felt like I'd snuck in, like I wasn't allowed to. But it's actually that leadership program that helped me with feeling like I could talk about it as well. I could be a leader and you're not being, I don't know, up yourself by saying you want to be a leader. It's, everyone's a leader in their own way, and everyone's actions can help others feel like they can do it too. So it's probably like the last 2 years or so is that I started to feel more comfortable in it. I still get nervous, but I'm like, no. Like a lot of the time when my because I'm used to it, I'm just like, oh no, my symptoms aren't too bad. I'm not that disabled, but then I forget like, oh, people can just like go to work and go outside and cook and clean and do all those things. I'm like, I can't even make myself a meal all the time. So I'm like, oh yes. Definitely.
And I think it's just that it's that stigma of, this is expected that you should be able to go to work and do this and do that and do all of, like, I think it's ridiculous expecting people to do all these things and have a 9-to-5 job and be able to, like, upkeep their self-care and look after their mental health and do, like, all the laundry list of things. Like, I think it's, is it working for us?
I don't think so. Not even non-disabled people. Like everyone I know doing all those things is stressed, especially if you're juggling like parenting as well. Like that's a fun extra layer, but as well, parenting and disability, or even just and disability, it's a full-time job to be unwell. So it's hard. We've kind of been conditioned as a society to see rest as a bad thing, to see our value as something that comes from our productivity, that, we feel guilty for resting. I feel guilty for resting and I need it to survive. We've just been fed these ableist ideas our whole lives and they just don't work for so many people for so many reasons. And we really need to just do it how it works best for people. Unfortunately, for example, one way to do that could be like working part-time, but cost of living is very hard, so lots of people can't do. Not to mention getting a part-time job that's, for example, open to remote work, which allows a lot of disabled people to be able to work. And that's a thing that's very difficult. Like, oh no, you have to come to the office. Like, why if you don't actually have to be there? Like, inclusion and accessibility is more important.
Yeah, definitely. And it's like, yeah, if you can do the whole job from home, kind of makes sense to be able to put that out there as well and be able to open up to wider lens of applicants and things like that.
Absolutely.
I heard this really interesting thing when I was at in a yarn up circle the other day about providing a program to Indigenous and non-Indigenous participants. And when they provided it to the Indigenous participants and they invited them to introduce themselves, it was all about country and their kids and their families, and that was the way they identified. And then when they asked the non-Indigenous participants to introduce themselves, a lot of people started with, well, my job is this. And I feel like we do have this capitalist lens on things, and like you said before, it's like what we can do is our ability to feel worth because of that lens, which is ridiculous because there's so much more than what we can work as a form of our value.
Absolutely. And, we've just been fed this lie, but also put in this hard position where we need to be a part of that capitalist society to, earn money, to pay bills, to pay medical bills, to buy food. And especially if you have additional mouths to feed or additional costs, like it's very expensive to be disabled. So it's hard, but it's a messed up system for so many reasons.
And I really appreciate that you've said that it's like, you now feel like you have those leadership skills to be able to go out there and speak up and do things like that. But there's still times where you still question, like, hey, am I the right person for this role and things like that. But you do it anyway. Like, I love the courage in that as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's lots of things I'm like, oh gosh, I don't feel experienced enough for that. Like, okay, I'll give it a go. I'll give it a go. Like, I did a keynote speech earlier this year for the first time at the National Youth Disability Summit, and that was
Wow.
amazing. And I was freaking out. I was like, oh my gosh, I've done speeches before and like spoken at events, but this is my first keynote. And I was like, oh no, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. I should just tell them that they should cancel and find someone else that's better. And then he's like, you know what? I'm just gonna share my story. I'm just gonna do it, do my best. And it actually went really, really well, and I've gotten really good feedback, and
That's
it was
amazing.
magical. But still feel like an imposter all the time. But I think that's something that a lot of people deal with, and you just have to be like, you know what? So what? I can be anxious and I can not feel enough, but I can still do the thing when I have capacity. You don't get
Definitely.
anything by not trying, but also you don't always have to try because rest is important.
Yeah, it's like finding that balance between still giving it a go. And I think half the time, the people who are up on those stages are the people who are giving it a go, even when they've got a myriad of reasons to not give it a go, or a lot of things that might make it harder for them. But it's the fact that, yeah, you got up anyway, and I love that. But also recognizing that rest is important as well, and we can't do that every day of our lives.
No.
Yeah. Do you have any advice for young people out there who might be struggling with disability or ableism, that's coming up for them?
It's hard, especially for ableism is one, internalized, but two, being repeated by people around you that supposedly care about you but actually have really harmful things. I know a lot of people and have myself experienced it, and it's very hurtful. People, if you know someone that's disabled, you need to learn about these things. You need to learn about the social model of disability versus the medical model of disability, which, if anyone isn't aware of that, the medical model basically says that disabled people are the problem. We're the ones that need to be fixed, and it's all deficit based and kind of tragic. Whereas the social model is like, no, we are disabled additionally, and things are harder because society does not consider us and accommodate us and is not flexible in so many ways, like from transport to healthcare to jobs to socializing to the community. It's basically no one thinks of disabled people, and that's really awful.
This is a big question, but how could we do better in society? Like, how could we be better to support people who are going through these struggles?
I mean, a lot of things. Personally, I think it's vital for people to learn about ableism, what it is and what it looks like, and think about how it makes people feel. And it actually makes, if you love someone but you're trying to tell them to, oh, just push through, or oh, don't use your mobility aid because yada 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 yada, like, no, you're actually making it worse and adding emotional turmoil and guilt and all these other things onto a person on top of what they're already experiencing. It's bad. So I think a lot of this also comes from really bad disability representation. Like, a lot of representation that we've traditionally seen has been done by non-disabled people. They might be non-disabled actors, for example, or non-disabled writers, and it's often this narrative of tragedy or inspiration porn, and that's not a reality. I mean, obviously there are tragic components, and obviously disabled people can be inspiring, but we shouldn't inspire you for just existing. Like, you shouldn't say, oh, it's inspirational because that person left their house, and like, oh, my life could be worse because at least my legs work or something. Like, no, don't do that. If it's anything, just be like, oh wow, they've actually, tried to do some good and are achieving things. Like, I think a good rule of thumb is if you would not congratulate a non-disabled person for it, don't congratulate a disabled person for it. But I think also, like, actively following disabled people, actively consuming material written, directed by disabled people. There's plenty of TV shows with, great actors that are actually disabled and actually autistic. Chloe Hayden is one that comes to mind from being a great autistic actor. Loved her in Heartbreak High. But also, like, Hannah Divney also has some excellent representation in some shows on SBS. And so many others that I am just completely blanking on. But, you know, read our books, actively follow us on social media, think about the ways disability impacts us, think about all the things in society that, you know, are barriers and how you can help, because it shouldn't just fall onto disabled people to try and make a difference. So if you see something that's inaccessible or someone hasn't written their accessible information, call them out, like, kindly be like, hey, just wondering, because those things are really vital for disabled people.
How can we be better allies?
I think it's just taking notice on the issues of what disabled people are talking about. We have put in a lot of work, and it's important to actually, you know, follow us. It's important to engage. It's important to share. It's important to bring these things up. You know, if you see us discussing an issue, could you like, comment, or share some way to amplify it? Can you contact an MP? Can you contact a business owner or an event? Is there a way that you can be an ally and help us not make it so hard? Just, you know, listen to us, and, you know, also make sure you follow a diverse range of disabled people, not just palatable white people. It's not diversity if it's just, you know, that. So we need to absolutely also consider all the additional things that impact people who have additional layers of marginalization, whether it's being the LGBTIQA plus many letters community, whether it's being a person of color, whether it's being someone who's poor or living rurally, and, you know, all these other factors that can influence how you experience it. That has an impact on your experience as a disabled person, and
Definitely.
it's expensive. But really just listening to us, and if we're fighting something, help us fight. And also pay us, you know, hire us. Look at spaces where disabled people are missing and ask, okay, how can we make this more accessible and more inclusive, genuinely, not just tokenistically?
Can you give us an example of genuine versus tokenistic?
Oh, I guess genuine inclusion would be, you know, making sure, for example, if you're having an event, obviously wheelchair accessibility is important, like making sure someone in a wheelchair can get in, has access to a bathroom, everything else that we might need. But it's also considering people, you know, with sensory issues. It's considering people who are blind and deaf. It's considering people of all kinds of disabilities, and, you know, who may have all kinds of access needs, and actively making it feel like a safe place, because a lot of the time you do feel like a bit of a pain in the butt for pointing out lack of accessibility. And a lot of people get really mad, and, you know, I'm not doing it to be a jerk. I'm doing it because, you know, we deserve to be in the room just as much as you.
Definitely.
I guess tokenistic would be, you know, places that claim to care about diversity and inclusion, but then don't make their events accessible, don't make their posts accessible. They may not, you know, use like image descriptions, for example, or alt text, so people using screen readers can't see, which would be people that have, you know, who are blind or vision impaired somehow. That's how they see, you know, pictures, for example, if they can't see them with their eyes. It's like, you know, have to have a description. So lots of people don't do those things. I'm like, oh, disability is important, but we're not going to actually actively include you, involve you, make sure you can come. But then they'll be like, oh, yay, disabled person. Hi, token person in the wheelchair. Which happens a lot.
Unfortunate. So if someone was listening to this podcast, for example, and like I feel like privilege was a huge deal for me, learning about my privilege and that I had it was like an eye-opening experience because then I could see where people didn't have it as well and the differences. So if someone was listening to this and wanted to learn more about their privilege or like the ableism that exists out in the world, like where would you point them?
Oh gosh, I mean, I guess about privilege, I think it's really important that we acknowledge it, especially white privilege, because it does have a big impact. We don't understand what it's like to experience the world as a person of color. We can listen to them, but it's not the same. And the least we can do is acknowledge that and the disparities and not get offended and not have white tears about it. So obviously the people to be looking at that for advice would be people of color because they live it. I did read Ruby Hammed's White Tears, Brown Scars, which I was very eye-opening and shocking, honestly, that I didn't recognize all these layers of privilege. But, you know, I think we have a responsibility as having that privilege to learn about it and how it impacts it and how other people don't have it. I
Definitely.
also really want to read Antoinette Latouf's, I think it's called like How to Influence White People and Lose Friends. I went to a book launch of that and that was
Love
great.
that.
But there's so many things and it's just making sure you're being inclusive. Because I don't know if anyone else notices, but all the time you look at things and everyone's white and everyone's non-disabled and it's just this cookie cutter representation of humanity that just doesn't exist. So definitely looking at people in those marginalized groups, whatever they are, and making sure you learn from their experiences, but also recognize that pointing out your privilege is not an attack.
Yeah, definitely, and
It's
acknowledging it.
trying to make the world a better place. And, you know, white people have done some pretty awful stuff, so, and it's still having huge impacts, so we need to recognize that. In terms of disability, again, I think it's just remembering that disabled people exist, remembering all the barriers. Like, it's very easy to go through your life if you have those privileges and not think about them. Like, for example, going on a plane as a non-disabled person, you just get to the airport, you go to the gate, you jump on the plane, you jump off, and you're there. But for a disabled person, that's not the case. One, you're terrified because you know things are bad. Lots of people get the mobility aids damaged. I think the statistic in the US is 29 wheelchairs a day get damaged beyond repair, just in the US. Just in the
Gosh.
US. I do need to Google and make sure that's still accurate, so don't quote me on that one, anyone listening. But you know, there's so many things. People with service animals, people that are blind and deaf and autistic and all these things. And you know, it's really hard. You'll wonder, will my mobility aid make it? Will I be treated respectfully? Will I be assaulted? Which happens. Like, literally, I've had a pat down search before at the airport, and people have just come straight up to me and like touched my boobs and not even said, oh, hey, we're doing a pat down search. Do you mind?
Gosh.
Like, just touching you and treating you like you're an inanimate object and not a human. And, you know, I think that's a very big difference to what a non-disabled person would experience. I mean, I know because I've had both experiences. So just remembering that people have different experiences and we need to be aware of that and how we can try and make things better. And I think the start of that is just being aware and it's making an effort to understand different perspectives and just do your best.
And how do you manage that? Like when you go through a terrible experience, I have been following you for the past year and I've heard about your experiences on planes. How do you go through that situation and then bring yourself back up from it? Like, what's the process of that?
It's hard because stuff happens pretty much any time I leave the house. Like, just trying to catch a train, for example, is often a difficult thing. I've like fallen through the cracks of a train, for example,
Oh
because the
gosh.
ramp wasn't there. And yeah, just so many things. But I think what keeps me going is one, knowing that I am not the only person that experiences this, and that makes me so angry. It makes me so angry, and that this is a thing that we don't talk about. And when we do talk about it, we're often told, like, oh, we're just being dramatic, and all these other horrible things that, you know, try to diminish us. But no, all these things add up, and it's really awful. So I guess I find empowerment by sharing that lived experience and trying to give the words that someone else may not have, as well as educating other people that this happens. Trying to create change and also just helping other people going through the same thing to know they're not alone. And together we can share our stories and together we can fight. You know, we can make it better. Things have not changed by people being, you know, I can't think of the word, but meek and not being willing to put themselves out there. Nothing has changed by not talking about the problem. So we need to talk about the problem. Even if people diminish it and dismiss us and think that we're just being dramatic, we're actually not. It's a big systemic issue. And I feel like the issues that affect disabled people, they also stem from the same issues that marginalize every other group. Like, obviously, that's a bit more complicated, but it all comes from this idea that we have to be one way and one look and one way of doing things. And that just does not work. And it's not an accurate representation of humanity and our experiences and our diversity.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. We're just missing the diversity there, and definitely hearing you on that, that even if it's like the person you talk up to, maybe if they're not hearing you, it's like the fact that you've still said it. There's probably 10 other people on social media who have seen that and really resonated, or been like, wow, I've been through that exact same experience. And it's the feeling of not feeling alone in that and not feeling gaslit and like, hey, here's someone who the representation piece, here's someone who's been through what I've had to go through. And look, if they can speak up and speak out, maybe I can too.
Yeah, and I also guess showing that you can survive. I began sharing my stories when I was probably my whole life, really. I have chronic oversharer, being autistic and all. But I started by talking about my experiences with mental illness. I started by, things like self-harm and suicidal ideation and attempts and recovery from that. And those things really resonate with a lot of people because we don't talk about them, and it kills people. It kills people. We've lost way too many people to mental illness, and we don't consider it to be important enough. And disabled people obviously have mental illness as well, and it compounds. And if your world is pain and fatigue and all these barriers, and you have mental illness, it's hard. It's hard to hold on. So it's like, no, you know what? We're not just gonna take it. Let's create some change.
Yeah, and it's like that shame and stigma is so pervasive, and yeah, it can be so harmful to people.
Especially with previous generations. Like, I have grown up as, a baby millennial, but I didn't realize growing up that these things weren't spoken about and were so stigmatized, like seen as embarrassing almost, and that they should be hidden. I'm like, you know what? No. Stuff that. I'm not going to hide. If it makes you uncomfortable, that's your problem.
We almost need people like you who are the chronic oversharers to kind of lead the cause and go, hey, I'm talking about this. I don't care how you feel about it. Like, that's great.
Overshare too much, maybe. It makes me anxious too. I'm like, oh God, oh God, oh God, I've been too vulnerable. But I think that's what connects with people. And I think that's what makes people want to make things better, because you see a human behind it. And the
Definitely.
impact.
If you can connect to one person out there, it's made all the difference. And I think vulnerability is that key. It's like if we're too perfect and whatever, it's like we're not expressing the truth of us. And people feel that intuitively. They'll just connect with something that's the truth of a person way easier than something that's curated and perfect and, all the rest of it.
Oh, yeah. I do make an effort to show my ups and my downs and, show up when I'm glam and, dressed up with makeup and whatever. But also, like, for example, now I'm wearing an hoodie. But yeah, life isn't perfect and people aren't perfect, and we need to stop expecting that they will be.
And it's important to be able to do both and feel comfortable in both of those as well. So I'm sure we've inspired someone out there. If someone was like, hey, how do I go from, where I'm at now to being a disability advocate? Like, what would the first step be?
Literally all I've done is just share my experiences. Like, I know as a journalist, I have different mediums that a lot of people probably don't, but if you're listening to this and thinking, I want to write an article, you absolutely can. You don't need to have a degree, you don't need to have experience. If you like writing and you have a story to tell, tell it. Find a news outlet that publishes stories similar to yours. And if you're confident in writing, like, feel free to just go do a pitch. Send an email to an editor and be like, hey, I have this story. Are you interested? And if not, you can always ask a journalist or hire someone to write it for you. Like, PR people are excellent for that. That's literally their job. But you don't, also don't have to do that. You can just create a social media account and start posting about things that matter to you. And maybe like I try and post a lot of things that are unseen.
Yeah.
So, shedding light on those things. But it's really, you just gotta start, and it's just a bit depressing when you start, I guess, because you're like, oh no, validation and from people, and like, oh gosh, I hope people like it, and it's terrifying. But I started having no following, and I now have, I think, almost 10,000 at Chris Nick
Wow,
platforms.
that's great.
So I'm not doing anything special. I'm just doing my best, I guess, and being honest and vulnerable. But definitely media does help, because people obviously see it and are like, oh cool, that resonates. But there's so many ways you can make a difference. You don't also have to be on social media. You can always, find organizations that you feel like are doing a good thing, and see if there's a way you can work with them. There's lots of lived experience roles as well for mental illness and disability. Like, lots of hospitals and health services want lived experience, but there are ways, and lots of people share these things. You just have to be on basically a lot of newsletters, try and see these opportunities and find these opportunities, but they are out there.
Yeah, they definitely exist. And yeah, there's just such a amazing space when you have someone who's lived experience to come from that place and to be able to, they just connect with the whoever it is, the clients, whoever it is, on such a different level than, yeah, the clinical level, like you've mentioned.
Definitely.
I'd love to ask you, this is a bit left of field, but what's your book about?
Oh yes, oh my gosh, my book. I say I'm writing a book, but I have not made progress on it in a little while, because one, it doesn't pay me, and I kind of need to put my energy into paid work when I have such limited energy. But it is about my experiences as a disabled journalist in the Black Summer bushfires, my community's survival, and how we've been impacted since then, as well as being forgotten and what that is like. And back when the fires were happening, I had so many news outlets wanting to work with me, wanting to publish stories, and now I can't get anyone to accept a pitch, even though people are still homeless and still suffering. So I'm like, you know what, I'm gonna write a damn book. You won't help me, I'll help. So I'm gonna
I
write
love that.
it. Oh gosh. I do have a literary agent who is interested, but I have to rework some chapters. It's just very scary, and I just want to do everyone's stories justice, because I do appreciate that people have shared some of their deepest, darkest traumas with me. It's pretty intense. And then also my own trauma in it. But I really hope I can do it someday. It's on my list. It was on my list today to work on it, but I don't think that's going to happen, because I'm very tired.
Well, we very much appreciate you coming and doing this today. And I can't wait to read your book. That sounds amazing. And I definitely hear you on, oh my God, it's everyone's story. It's not just my story. So there's this like element of like, I've got to do really well for that.
Yeah. It's, oh, yeah, it's a lot. And then, like, the trauma of it, and coping with that, and all the other things. And I just need to write it. That's how you do a book. You just have to write. Sorry to anyone that's also trying to write a book and is feeling called out right now, but go write your book.
Heads down, bum up, get your book done. Definitely.
Even just 100 words. It's just on my list, just 100 words. You can do 100 words, even if they're nonsense.
And I love that that was your mental process was, hey, well, if they're not going to listen anymore, I'm going to do it anyway, and I'm going to write a book instead. And then we'll come, like, people will read this book and, I'll get there anyway.
Yeah, I just remember writing these stories, and you just can't capture them in 1,000 words for an article. There's just so much being missed, and so much devastation, but also love and community coming together. And I wanted to show those parts and those healing things. It's just very hard. I took a big project.
Okay, so where can we find you, Zoe, if we're looking to work with you in future, or even just follow your page and support you?
Oh, I would love if anyone wants to follow me or connect with me, or hire me. That would be great. But I am on everything, because I have major FOMO, fear of missing out, for anyone that doesn't know the acronym. So I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Threads, I'm on TikTok. I have a website too, which you even find most of these things if you just Google Zoe Simmons journalist. But specifically on Twitter, I am at It Begins With Z. On Threads, TikTok, and Instagram, I'm at Something Beginning With Z. I think like Zoe Simmons journalist or something on Facebook, and Zoe Simmons on LinkedIn. But www.zoesimmons.com is my website, but it should show up if you just Google me.
Fantastic. Thank you. And I can vouch for Zoe's work. She's edited my book that's coming out at the end of this year on relationships and healthy relationships. And she was an amazing editor to work with. So if you need someone to look over your book, all those people we just called out, here you go. Next step done.
Yeah, let me ignore my book by writing yours. But yeah, it was so great to work with you. It's such a great book. I can't wait for it to come out. And I just love connecting with people and hearing why they're passionate about something and helping them find the perfect words, because writing is hard. It's very hard. So if I can help make that easier, whether it's writing a website or a blog post or an award application or a brochure, a report, a speech, literally anything, I will do my best to help you with all that I can.
Yeah, I honestly believe everyone's got a message in their heart that needs to be shared with this world. It's just putting it into words, and then the fear of being seen when it gets out. That's the part that I struggle with as well. And you've mentioned as well, it's like, how is it going to go when it gets put out there? But we've got to just do it anyway. And I love that. And yeah, is
Yeah.
there anything else you want to share with the listeners?
I guess just, it would be great if people can think about disability and ways you can be allies. And if you do really resonate with what I've been saying and thinking, oh, you know what, my experiences might be disability, they probably are. And that's okay. You're allowed to rest. You're allowed to do whatever you need to live, even if other people don't understand it, and they often won't. But you just have to do what's best for you. You just listen to your body, because rest is productive, and rest is also radical, I guess, in our society. But you need it, even if you're not disabled. If you're feeling worn out and burnt out, the world won't end, hopefully. I mean, I guess it depends on your job. But you need to take time for you, because you are the most important thing in your life. But I hope my words have helped, and use mobility aids if you need to. If they make a difference in your life, use them. That was something that was really hard for me, with a walking stick, a walker, and a wheelchair. All layers of ableism I had to undo there. But if things help you, you are allowed to use them, and you don't have to struggle unnecessarily.
Yeah, I think it's a radical concept to be like, I'm putting myself first. I don't care what anyone thinks right now, and I'm going to rest, or I'm going to use a mobility aid. I'm going to do whatever is best for me. And I don't care about your opinion because it's better than me struggling up these stairs or whatever it is. And I
Yeah.
think that's so important. That's such an important message because it's just so radical and it shouldn't be. It should be
It's
normal.
wild. That's radical. It's like, what? You should look after yourself? What? Wild. Who would do that?
Just in the productivity world we live in, it's just like burn out this, do all the things, do all the things. It's like, and I have to remind myself of that sometimes, that this book is still going to come out, whether I get up early and I write at 5 a.m. or whether I don't. And I think it's the same thing. Like you can still get your message out in a time frame that incorporates rest and looks after you as well.
Yeah, even if you just do 1%, if you do, for example, if you're writing a book, couple of words, that's better than nothing. Or, any task really, just do 1%. And if you can't do that, that's also okay. Just do it when you can. That's hard. Cut
Definitely.
yourself some
It's hard
slack.
enough. And I really appreciate you on, and please go follow Zoe and support beautiful disability advocates out in our world.
Absolutely, there's so many, and I'm sorry I can't think of many off the top of my head, but just Google and make sure that you aren't just following white disabled advocates, because there needs to be more diversity in that, and not just palatable people. Making sure you remember that there are so many different types of disabilities, and all our stories are important. But yes, would definitely love if anyone wants to connect with me and help me. I'm poor. To quote Bridesmaids.
You so much.